Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
CrowdSec, the collaborative and open source cybersecurity solution. Analyze behaviors, respond to attacks, and share signals across the community for free. Let's make the internet safer together. Learn more at crowdsec.net.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Tech Done Different. As always, I'm your host, Ted Harrington. And with me here today is my special guest, Ahmad Georgi, the CTO of Georgi Technology Leadership. Ahmad, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, man. It's a pleasure to be here. Excited.
Yeah. Those of us who are listening can't see it, but those who are watching can. You are wearing an epic Zelda t-shirt right now. I mean, legend.
Gotta represent, man. Every time I wear it, I get comments outdoors. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's like you're touching the nostalgia that everybody has, right? Everybody has such a positive memory of that game.
I used to walk a mile and a half to my friend's house just to play the original. I didn't have a Nintendo, so yeah.
That's dedication right there.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to have you on the show so we could talk about leadership in tech. I mean, certainly that's, you know, one of the core audiences we have here with the show who we're trying to serve. That's who you serve in your consulting business as well. And
that's right.
You said this thing to me the other day that I thought was really interesting, and I'd like you to explain it. You said, this was you speaking, you said, you know, my mission on earth is to grow better leaders in tech. And I thought that was both powerful as well as so simple to understand. But maybe you could walk me through, what do you mean by that? And what's your viewpoint on that mission and why it matters?
Yeah, I love the question. So my entire career has been dedicated to scaling technology teams. And even as a developer, early on in my career, I always wanted to figure out, like, why do some teams work? Like, why am I on some teams where I am totally jazzed to come to work and to build stuff? And like, it's just flowing. And why on some other teams, like, I've had like some of the worst experiences and the worst bosses. I was always fascinated with it. Always fascinated with leadership development. What does it mean? And I really didn't buy into the quote unquote soft stuff. There's a lot of material out there, you know, get better at accountability, get this, get that. But like, as an engineer, is there a way I can apply engineering practices to actually becoming a better leader? And so it was a personal commitment of mine that I always wanted to be the best leader possible. I wanted to be on a team where people 10 years later still remembered, 20 years later, still remember that time when you did this amazing project, you know. And I'm fortunate enough that today I still talk to folks that worked for me 20, 25 years ago and say, hey, you were the best boss I ever had. And that's not tooting my own horn. That's just the dynamic we created where you create something that's bigger than yourself, right? So I started thinking really through that. And my passion, even though still work in tech, still code, still help scale architecture, we still do a lot of that work in our firm. It's not enough. You got to also figure out how to scale leadership. And I do believe the one remaining technology advantage for technology teams is the quality of their leadership. And so I believe that my personal mission on this earth is to grow better leaders in technology. And when you think about it, there's no baseline. People don't know how to become a better leader. How do I get to the next level? What does it mean to be a good CTO? Nobody knows. Everyone has a different definition, right? So I've dedicated my work to a lot of that.
And do you think that there is a distinction between leadership in technology versus leadership in other disciplines? I mean, certainly there's commonalities, but you're focusing on this type of leader. Why is that and how is it different?
Yeah, a couple reasons. One's more of a defensive reason, one's an offensive reason. I think defensively, let's be honest, we have some of the worst leaders in our industry historically. And don't get me wrong, I've worked with great leaders in technology. And the reason why is that we're often not set up for success. I think a lot of non-technical folks will see someone who's really technical, who's excelling at what they do, and their very next thought is, that person needs to become a manager.
Right.
Not everyone's destined to do that. Just because you're technical does not mean you're actually fit to be a leader. And then you get people who, with very good intentions, I mean, who's going to turn down a promotion? With very good intentions, step into that leadership role, and to use a technical term, they right? It's like, okay, like I have no idea what I'm doing now. I'm in this totally different space. So I think you apply that, you know, exponentially across the industry. Now you have a whole group of leaders. You know, when our firm is brought in often to clean up the work of some leader that went off on some project, and now there's all this technical debt built up and they don't know what to do. And, you know, the leader's got this notoriety. So I think defensively, we have to recognize as an industry, and I've done it before too in my career. Like you promote somebody because they're the best technical voice in the room. And then it's like, no, that didn't work. So that's the defense reason. And so I think all these leaders now need help. And they need help on how to properly scale their leadership. I think offensively, you look about the executive team and the boardroom, never has there been a time more than now where these groups need a technical voice that is a leader in the room. And what I mean by that practically is, as engineers, we're really passionate about getting to root cause and, you know, debugging, right? And putting that breakpoint in and following the code and execution path through and figuring out exactly what's going on so we can resolve that issue. The leadership community in general in business, they lack that skill set. Everyone's in meetings. Everyone's busy. So you kind of take people's word for it, or you look at a PowerPoint slide and go, okay, that's the problem. Let's go after it. Let's spend millions of dollars and go figure that out. What the leadership community needs, the executive community needs, is a leader at the table who's excelling in that technical root cause analysis. Someone that can say, wait, guys, how do we know that's the right problem? Let's dig into it a little bit more, right? And that's an engineering practice that technology leaders can bring to the table. You know, oftentimes we tell technology leaders, okay, you can't be technical anymore. Be more people focused. I don't coach people that way. I say, if you're technical, stay that way, because we need a technical voice. As long as you can apply it the right way, you need that. And other executives who have been in business for years, they can learn from that. And you have a unique voice and a role to play there.
Yeah. So I want to dig into that, this idea that I've seen play out myself many, many, many times, this idea that, you know, the person who's like the best player on the team becomes the leader because they're the best player in the team. I mean, like that goes back to high school, right? That's literally how the captain of the team was voted, right? And now here are in the workplace, and even people who aren't athletes follow that sort of same model. But what's really interesting, if I break apart what I'm hearing you say, it sounds like there's sort of two parts to that challenge. So one is, how do we develop leaders? And the other is, how do we make sure that people who are on a technical non-leadership path, how do we help them see a career path when it's not clear, when the obvious next step is, well, if I want to get promoted, make more money, take the next rung, whatever it is, that means leadership, when it might be something else. So how do we resolve those two sides to the problem?
All right. That's a lot to unpack. So I think the first thing you asked is, how do we grow leaders, right? Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a very specific methodology and path where you can track progress. This whole like concept of like, you are here on the map. Nobody knows where they are in their career in technology. At least the majority of the people that I work with. And part of that is because these career paths have been defined by HR organizations that are not technical. And so for the companies that actually do have a career path, which a lot of companies don't have that, but for the companies that do have it, it's typically a very formal definition defined by HR, maybe in collaboration with technology, maybe not. And then you got to follow the boxes somehow, right? And what we lack is an industry standard methodology on what it means to grow as a technology leader. So rather than saying, hey, to go from manager to director, you need to increase how you hold the teams accountable. Okay, what does that mean? I don't know what to do there. What do I do with that? How do I change my behavior tomorrow? Versus saying something like, hey, if you're a director in a code review, increased accountability looks like this. this is what you would do. And that's very specific, right? So at Georgia Technology Leadership, we actually built a methodology just like that, where we can say, you are here, you're the behaviors of the next level. How do we now get you there? What are those specific gaps? And that's a way to measure progress, because whether you use our methodology or anything else, you have to have a baseline. Otherwise, it's just someone's opinion, or very often I see a time-based promise, which, by the way, never works. Someone tells you, oh, yeah, in 6 months, we'll get you there.
Right.
Red flag, right? So I think the concept of growth, you look at the concept of growth in the entire world, there's a science to growth. There's a very deliberate path and progression, plants, trees, animals, everything. So why not for leadership, right?
So what is that science to growth?
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about, is you have to have a methodology and a path, like breaking down the actual components. What does it mean to be a good technology leader at every level? And then breaking those components into, and I'm happy to talk through some of those details, into actual behaviors day to day that we would see. Like someone says, okay, well, you need to have a sense of ownership. Okay, that's a great value. But what does that actually mean? Mm-hmm. Like how does ownership play out when there's an incident? What, as a CTO, what would that look like? How does that play out? And so teaching people the behaviors that are necessary to actually grow to that level.
So what do we think is the right way to help communicate this? And selfishly, at our organization, we're thinking through how to do this as well. So I'm like scribbling notes, like, what should I go do back in my organization? But, we're really interested in this idea of career pathing and making it really clear to people what is their next rung. And what's really interesting is I look across our organization, some departments, the career path is much more clear than others. And so we're trying to make it more clear, across the board. And so one of the things that I struggle with is thinking about how do I, for each person, help communicate to them that next step, and then what the step after that looks like. So what's the method? Is it, are you like, should we be writing down, here's what the job description is of the next job that you're going to earn your way into, or is it something different, or how do you go about doing that?
Well, first you need a couple of, it's like a federated model, right? So you need a core that's very standard. So first of all, is it very clear what the common values of a leader in your organization are, period, whatever level you are, right? And so with each level, what's the standard core? So with each level, we look at what are the standard values, and I've mapped what they are, right? And then with each value set, what are the behaviors expected within each value? And within each behavior set, how do I operationalize that? How do I make it living and breathing every day? I'll give you an end-to-end example, right? So common leadership values. For us in our organization, the number one value is ownership, which is, hey, I expect that you're going to be accountable, not just for your work, your team's work, the entire company. Like, you don't get to be a fan in the stands. We're always on the court playing the game. We're all on the same team. If somebody fails, you don't get an opportunity to point the finger and go, I can't believe that shot that Ted took. Can you believe? What is he doing? You don't get to do that when you have this value of ownership. There are certain behaviors that play out as a result. But the way we operationalize that, one way we do tactically, and I do this with my clients too, is at the end of every retro, we just do a very quick fist of five. And we rate the leader against the value. So we say, hey, how did Ted do against ownership this last sprint? Ready? 1, 2, 3, go. 5, 4, 3, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And it's nothing that goes into a performance review, but everyone knows it's a feedback loop. And it makes it living and breathing. It takes the values off the wall and off the poster and off the email into something that's living and breathing, where the leader knows, hey, every retro, I'm going to get rated. The team knows that. So they know that we actually live and breathe servant leadership. And we take this very seriously. So I'm just giving you one and an example of, like, here's how it play out. And then here's how we make it real on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. I like that real time sort of, and maybe less formalized feedback loop, right? It's not the anxiety that might go into a, periodic review or whatever. Yeah, that's powerful stuff. And one of the things I've noticed too, I'm curious to your thought on how this plays out. But I've seen in our organization and in other organizations too, when there's a high performing leader and there's feedback sought for that high performing leader and people are generally happy and they're like, you did a great job. Or,
yep.
Well, basically, let's paint that as a scenario. You did a great job. But that leader still needs to keep growing. And one of the things I've seen that people do to overcome that, like, you did a great job and thus there's no feedback, is to say something like, you know, it sounds like you measured on a scale of 5. So, hey, if I'm a 4, there's no improvement you're suggesting. What would it take for me to get to be a 5? Is that part of what you think it requires in order to have an effective feedback loop?
Absolutely. You want to know what it's going to take to get to the next level. And sometimes it's a balancing act, Ed. It's like, is it really worth it to get to the 5? Like, am I at the point of diminishing returns? For a leader that's really good, like I'm working with one right now, he's doing a great job, right? But he keeps asking, hey, how do I get to a 5? How do I get to a 5? Instead of, maybe what's my next growth path? Maybe it's time not to get to the 5. Maybe it's time to get to CTO. Maybe that's his next path, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it depends on what the question is, where they're placed. And part of it is, as a leader, are you doing the work to know your people very well? Where you're coaching them through very specific situations, you're seeing how it plays out. Where are they a 4? And where sometimes they might be a 5 in some situations, right? But are you doing that work to know that, and then to know the opportunities in the organization, and then be able to match the two and go, okay, I think you'd be fit here. I think this is the next uncomfortable spot for you. Let's go try that out, right?
Yeah, I love that idea of constantly pushing ourselves and especially growing leaders into these areas of discomfort, because that's, you know, you're only going to grow where you're uncomfortable. So
that's right.
Would the argument then be that anytime a leader reaches a 4 out of 5 rating, that's the time to say, and it's time to kick your butt into the next, even if you want to get 5 out of 5, like that is not what you're going to start growing in? Or is that oversimplifying the way to think about it?
I mean, there's a lot to it. I believe that you never wait till that time to talk about the next level. And I learned that lesson early in my career. I was a developer. I was working for a pretty big company, and they had a mentoring program, right? I had a mentor who was older, experienced executive, and we had our first mentoring session, her and I. And, you know, I'm developing all day, all night. I'm happy. I don't want to grow. I had no concept of that. And she sort of said, hey, okay, so what's your next step? And I'm like, I don't know, keep coding, you know? And then she pushed. And so just to kind of satisfy her, I said, well, you know, maybe I'll be a manager one day. And I didn't really believe that. And I never forgot, like without flinching, this moment was like 30 years ago. I never forgot it. Without flinching, she looked at me and she said, why not CTO? And I was like,
hell yeah.
What? it blew my mind, you know, and I had the opportunity to reconnect with her recently and thank her because it made me start thinking like, I am thinking too small right now. Mm-hmm. And so if she had waited till I was a 4, I probably wouldn't have had such a powerful experience. So I think as a leader, you also have to have a vision for your people to guide them, to push them and help them to dream, you know, hey, you know, you could do even more than you think. Check this out. And then it's up to them, obviously, to respond and to pursue that path. But I never forgot that lesson.
That's a really powerful story. I love I felt like I was there in the room with you, yeah, having that moment. So that was, thank you for sharing that. That was really cool. So how should a leader who's responsible for growing more leaders, how should this person think about allocation of their time? And let me ask the question maybe slightly differently. In the assumption baked into that question, is that a leader should not be applying their time evenly to everybody, because low performers, that same amount of time is going to not produce the same result as if you invest that time in a high performer. That's my belief. And so I guess first question is whether or not you agree with that. But if that's true, and we should be focusing our efforts where the return will be highest on the highest performing leaders, how do we determine that? So I guess two questions. One, do you agree with the way I just laid it out? You know, yes or no, and obviously feel free to disagree. And then two, if that's true, how do we think about it?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a bit of a paradox. I'm really passionate about this particular question. So you always start with at least half your time on people. That's my rule mm-hmm. of thumb. And we do this exercise, by the way, it was done for me early in my career too, where everybody you talk to says, of course I value people. I spend lots of time with people. I actually have them measure their calendar for a week. So everyone I talked to said, of course I value people. And then you like look at the actual allocation of time, you find, oh, I only spend about 10% of my week on people. Well, okay. So how are you going to get growth out of that? You put 10% to anything in the world, they're not going to grow tangibly. Nothing's going to grow like that. So it's got to be at least 50%. And then you've got to adjust. If, like you said, you have a non-performer who continues to show that, then you can start to adjust that time over time. But I think the paradox here is that I always believe that when you invest in that, you're not going to the next performance review. You're building a lifestyle and a flow of leadership growth. That's your responsibility. Not, hey, how do I get them to the next level? How do I get to through that? Ooh, wrote the performance review, got through that, you know, dug up some examples. Okay, on to next year. Your responsibility is to uncover what I call the hidden gems in a company. And the hidden gems are people, could be code assets too, that have been discounted, that haven't been put in the right positions. I mean, I cherish the parts of my career where we didn't add a single person to the team. And that team was low performing, and we did some incredible just being able to change things, change environment variables, dig into what people, what their talents are, what the blockers are. But that only comes with investing that time, that half the time. On the flip side, everyone I've ever fired, I should have fired 3 months earlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, so you have this kind of paradox, but you don't know that until you actually invest the time. So I do think that you've got to invest at least half the time into your team.
Yeah, that's a really good benchmark for people to think about, because I bet you probably most people listening to this are like, hey, I know I totally invest time in people, and then think about, like you said, well, what's on your calendar? And I think even the most people oriented leaders probably don't even come close to that number. I learned a lesson similar to what you just described several years ago. And what I tried to do then as a result, I was like, I know that what's not going to be possible for me is just, hey, I have an extra 30 minutes right now. Let me go pop into someone's office, because those extra 30 minutes don't exist. And that's so what I tried to start doing is scheduling these recurring meetings with people. And when that's implemented effectively, I found it to be really effective, because now I find it every time I walk into this meeting and we're like, do we need to talk today? And then by the end of it, you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad we talked today. And I found that to be an effective structure. Is that one of the things that you recommend?
Absolutely. And I'll give you a couple of tips. Like, one thing I started doing as a shortcut is actually color coding my calendar. And this works wonders for people too. So that I don't actually have to analyze my calendar on a week-to-week basis. I know that green is people. I see how much green there is in the week. And I'm like, okay, I'm not spending enough time on people. Let me adjust that, right? The other thing is that this happens maybe subconsciously or maybe not, but a lot of technology leaders I work with start to value managing up more than growing leaders on their team. So CEOs demanding time, you gotta, you know, put in a progress report or something. It's like, what do? You apologize to your team. Like, hey, I got to reschedule this one-on-one. I'm so sorry. Like, CEO's calling. And so the messaging behind that is, hierarchy is more important than you. Managing up is more important than you. And one of the things I coach leaders on, and I live as well, there is nothing more important than the time with your team. And you've got to have courage as a leader to set that tone. By the way, I've seen people work on the other side of this, where they tell the CEO, hey, listen, you know, I've set the tone with my team. People come first. I cannot reschedule one-on-ones. I'm happy to reschedule with you. And it's fine. You know, people are afraid they're going to get fired, or people are going to look on it. It's actually the opposite. People look at you like, wow, this guy stands up for his values.
Right.
You know, and your team is going to so appreciate it. So one of the rules of thumb is when a one-on-one schedule, when you have time scheduled, nothing supersedes it. Of course, there's an exception here or there. You got a P0, whatever it is, but nothing supersedes that. Not even the CEO.
Yeah. I love it. I was sort of putting myself in that circumstance of, if someone were to come to me and say, no, I can't reschedule this 1v1 I have with somebody else, sorry, Ted, how I would react to that. And it was exactly what you said. I'd be like, hell yeah. I'm so glad you said
there
that.
You go.
That's the exact right decision. Yeah. I would definitely not be like, okay, well, you're fired. Like, of course that would be the opposite.
Right. But people have that fear. people have that fear. They're like, oh my God, I can't say that, because then what are they going to think? They're going to think I'm not doing good work, or I'm not being productive somehow, or whatever it is.
Yeah. You brought up this issue before about firing too late, and how that's sort of a paradox. Yes. With the investment of time to really untap, you know, or uncork someone's potential. I think this is, as a leader, definitely one of my severe deficiencies, is I hold on to people way too long, because I'm just like this eternal optimist. And I'm like, we'll get there. Yes. We'll get like a little more coaching, a little more opportunity. What am I not doing? How should leaders think about that challenge? I mean, even the way you said it, like 3 months too long, I'm usually like 6 months, maybe 9 months. Too long.
Yes, I was being nice.
How do you keep it so short? Like, how should we think about this?
Well, first and foremost, there's a lot of lessons here I'll unpack. So first and foremost, your values have to be clear. Your standards of what makes someone a good team member or a good leader have to be clear, right? And if it's clear, then when you make that decision, first of all, they're making the decision for you. You're not making the decision to fire anybody, I believe. The team member makes the decision for themselves. You just happen to be there to hold that accountable. And if the standards are clear, like on a sports team, right? Stats are clear every game. You know who's not having a good season because the standards are clear. And all the other team members know that you're not having a good season. Hmm. It's just truth. It doesn't have to wait for the coach to say something or a report or anything like that. So you want to get to a place in your culture where it's just clear. It stands out. You know, what you don't want is those things to be hidden. There's a lot of team cultures where lack of performance is hidden, and that's not good. And so we focus on how do you bring that to the surface, right? So that's the first step. And that's your responsibility as a leader. And I'm the same way, by the way. I want to give people a chance right down to the last day. But having been through it, it's never gotten easier for me letting people go, by the way, over the years. But I learned, too, that we're actually doing them a favor.
Yeah.
So in a lot of cases, I've seen folks that it's just not working, and they don't have the courage to go, or whatever reason there is. They need a new start. And sometimes they need that, as hard as it is. But more importantly, you are a steward of your team culture. And when you have one toxic person in there that's ruining the culture, you're sending the message that this team culture is actually not important to me.
Right.
There's, you know, people actually get proud of something that you stand up for. If you don't stand up for something, then people are just kind of looking around like, okay, well, why am I working my ass off here then? Right. You don't want that, right? So you have to be first and foremost a steward of the team culture. And if somebody's going against that and you hold them accountable, you're saying this thing is living and breathing, right? So, and that's why I say it could have happened sooner. I think people give chances because they personalize it. Like, I'm not doing a good job as a leader. I'm failing that person somehow, or whatever it might be. But if your standards are clear, it's their actions that are putting you in that situation. Mm.
So how should a leader communicate when there's that type of separation? You know, we've certainly run into that over the years where there's, you know, a very high performer, but who's maybe not a good culture fit. And so for that reason, like, we're slow to separate. And then once we do separate, now we struggle with this because we want to make a point out of it to everybody to say like, hey, that person that we just separated with, here's why that matters. But on the other hand, you're like, should we really be talking company-wide about personnel issues like that? Both not just legally, but also like, I don't know, the ethics of it feel weird. How should a leader think about that when that type of situation arises?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think of it like, you know, when you discipline your kid, you're like, I'm going to do it in front of all the other kids so they know, like, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't buy into that. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason why is, again, if your leadership standards are clear, your team culture is clear to everybody in terms of what does it take to be high performing on a daily basis? You don't need to make an example out of it. People just know. If you let that person go, they're like, yep, knew that. I've been seeing that for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
You know, so the reason why you have to make an example out of it is because the values are not clear. They're not living and breathing. They haven't done the work to do that. So now you get this big event that's about to happen. you know, where you're going to terminate someone, and we focus on what? The communication plan. How are we going to talk about this team? Okay, we're going to send an email out there. We're going to have a conference call. We're going to do this. And then, you know, it's like, we should already be communicating all that, you know? I do believe, though, in send-offs that are respectful. And, you know, I think that's important, because even if it's clear that someone does not belong on the team and you're going to let them go, your high performers are watching how you depart somebody. Because they're going to be like, hey, maybe that's going to be me one day. Like, are our values in action just when things are good? Or do they continue to be consistent when things are uncomfortable?
Well, as we wrap up here, I'd love to get your, I guess, the takeaways for people on this idea of defining our leadership standards. So if you were going to, you know, sit down with a member of our audience today and say, okay, you need to define your leadership standards, here's how you do it, what would you say?
Yep. Oh man, that's a whole nother conversation altogether. So like I said, we have a model and methodology around this, but very quickly, we talked about the value of ownership as a leader, right? You're a problem solver, not a problem reporter. You focus on problem solving. And to me, culture is just the stories that you tell every day. You know, spend your day bitching and moaning. That's your contribution to the culture. So this sense of ownership is about, I have a personal contribution to the culture and to how we solve problems and make decisions. The second is, you got to have an engineering mindset. Like in on technology teams, I don't believe in opinions. Opinions don't belong around the table. Opinions belong at the bar after work. Philosophies don't belong around the table. You know, you don't say, hey, I read an article about this cool thing. You say, I read an article about this cool thing and I went and tried it and I POC'd it. Let me show you the results. And I've thought about how we can apply it. Let me walk you through that. You know, anytime someone brings something up and says, oh, I don't think that's going to work, I'm like, really? Can you show me on the screen? 99% of the time, people can't show it. So part of the I think one of the required values of an engineering leader is that you can show it. You focus on the engineering. You focus on the technical competence. Not, you know, I don't know how many teams that I've worked with where somebody just says, well, that'll never work. And then people spin up all these meetings to try to convince the person. Like, you don't have to convince the person. They just said some words, which are meaningless. And until they can prove something, we're not going to take any action because our team's capacity is precious, right? So there's this concept of saying, prove it, and being okay that everyone's got to prove it anyway. So those are a couple, but there's a couple more.
Yeah, I love it, man. That's really, really powerful stuff. You got the wheels going a mile a minute for me right now. So I'm going to go back to our organization and implement a lot of these ideas. So thank you so much for being on the show. You were, the insights you provided are so powerful, not just for me, although I'm going to benefit certainly, but you know, all of our audience. So thank you. This has been great.
Anytime, Ted. Love what you're doing.
Awesome. If you guys want to learn more about what Ahmad's up to or request to appear on the show yourself, just head over to tedharrington.com/podcast and we'll catch you next time.
CrowdSec, the collaborative and open source cybersecurity solution. Analyze behaviors, respond to attacks, and share signals across the community for free. Let's make the internet safer together. Learn more at crowdsec.net.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different podcast with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.